Blog Talk Radio.
I won't just survive. Oh, you will see me thrive. Can write my story. I'm beyond the archetype. I won't.
Hello and welcome to Late Nights with the Midnight Bomber. Pour it out thick like honey, bittersweet like molasses, seeking your proliferous journey to profit to the empathetic masses. Calling on cathartic release, expel your demons. If but for a moment, increase and cease them, quell their influence, let them not commit treason. Today's contest, as you may have gathered from the quite an epic intro song, is to do with a number of prompts from Olympic competitors, past and present. And then in the second hour, we will be doing open poetry. How are you today, Bobby?
I'm splendid. Thank you for asking. How are you? Is Australia still on fire?
Always, but I think Greece is actually on fire at the moment, more to the point. It's looking pretty scary.
You know, California is always on fire, and it's getting scarier. I mean, it's like the spontaneous combustion is erupting globally.
Yeah, it doesn't help when people set it on fire.
Australia's on fire. Yeah, this is pretty frightening stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I am being shadowed by the illustrious Pam, who is with us tonight, and I am learning the green one. So So beware, everyone. I've been let loose on the controls.
Uh-oh. We're all in trouble.
Green room neophyte alert. Green room neophyte alert. Good for you.
How are you doing tonight, Pam?
Oh, I'm doing great. I was always looking forward to hanging out with you and Bobby and, you know, just commenting on some awesome poetry. A great contest idea, quotes from the Golden Athletes in celebration of the Olympics. And, you know, I just, I have a feeling it's going to be a great night of poetry. And I'm also very thankful that I live in an area where fires aren't prevalent. I mean, you know, we have our really bad snowstorms, but, you know, we definitely, not the same as, like, where, like, I know Faviana has been on evacuation notice because she lives in that section of Canada right above, like, Washington and where the forest fires are really bad. So,
I used to be very thankful. I'm just outside of D.C. in Virginia, and when I got here, I thought, well, because I grew up in the Midwest, tornadoes every time you turn around. So I'm thinking, great, not that many tornadoes. The occasional hurricane burns itself out when it gets to us, and you know, no forest fires. And I thought, and no tectonic plate activity. And then in 2010, we had an earthquake.
Oh,
shit, I
got to
move.
Oh, wow.
we'll start off with the first poem, and I'll give this one a read.
Hey.
And it's by Peter Solway.
Very young.
And actually, we have one more caller on the line. I'll just find out who this is. Area code 703. It's Neutron speaking.
Oh, this is Tom.
Tom, how are you doing, Tom?
Yes. Oh, quite good, quite good.
All right. Well, you've just joined us in time. I'm about to read Peter Solway's poem. And then if you have a poem to read, I'll get you to put it on the topic board so that I can read it afterwards. All right. So... this is a poem by Peter Solway called Part of the Mob. High-speed sheep, discus hurling conformists, spinning, rules everything, aiming plate in kitchen, losing champion, when winning was everything, posing for the Pompeii tourist, once a vital man, beat Shelley in the dash, put of Yeats, believed in Nietzsche, gold from Dross, Adolf upset but part of the mob with feathers of parrots, end poem. And Captain, would you like to start off the comments for this one?
I think sure, because I think this probably approaches the closest I will ever come to understanding Peter's writing. And I'm very, very excited about that. And he's got some interesting references in here. High-speed sheep, interesting reference. How everyone follows everyone else into the Olympics, losing champion when winning was everything. That's very prevalent. I like the very interesting last stanza, Adolf upset, but part of the mob with feathers of parrot. That was the 1939 Olympics in Germany, I believe, the one where Jesse Owens crushed the Russian competitors. And then Adolf wouldn't shake hands with him. So I really like this one. He's got some interesting references in there. Gold from Dross. Very nice.
Thank you, Captain. And Tom, what were your thoughts?
I look at this and I find myself thinking let me see if I can frame this properly. Starting with the high-speed sheep, the contests we create often are for the approval of the mob to keep them entertained. What was it? The importance of the circus in Rome was to keep the population entertained. and away from paying attention to politics.
Bread and circus.
Yeah, bread and circus, and this pushing the idea of the losing champions when winning was everything, posing for the Pompeii Taurus, you know, and Pompeii soon was buried under tons of lava dust. The beating Shelley, the whole argument going on back then as to what was man supposed to be and what was the purpose of man. And, you know, was man defined by the Bible or was man defined by science, gold from dross? And that last one that Bobby so, you know, aptly described, it so thoroughly catches the sense that the mob follows the hero of the moment, in a sense, and doesn't really know why it's following or what it's doing other than it's enjoying the noise, the parade, and everything else going on about them. It's a fascinating piece because it's almost a little frightening in its precision in pointing out a lot of the players in the game. Very well done. Very sharp.
Thank you, Tom. That was an excellent comment. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
I think this is excellent brevity. Peter Salway always has a style all his own. That last stanza actually reminds me of a quote, and I unfortunately can't remember who it's by, but I have to re-find it because I want to so badly use it as a prompt for a contest. And the quote being, "You can't shove feathers up your ass and call yourself a chicken." That's me up. That would make a great prompt for an after midnight. But
don't mince words, Sam. Say what you feel.
Right, exactly. But I like how this sets out the high-speed sheet discuss hurling conformist.
Oh, Pam has dropped. I'll just see whether she calls back. In the meantime, it's hard to follow up Pam's comment there, even though it was incomplete. I hope she realizes. Wait, here she is, I think. Hello, is that Pam?
Yes, I'm back. Sorry, my phone just decided. I don't know what it decided. But, yeah, the beginning, how it mentions the spinning and the aiming plates in the kitchen, I feel like, well, first of all, it mentions conforming, you know, and the idea of there's almost this kind of snarky tone with conforming, as if it's, you know, maybe not something, you know, that you should necessarily be proud of. But it makes me think of plate spinning, where people are spinning several different plates on different, I don't know if it's sticks or what, poles, but they have to keep running back and forth to make sure that none of them fall. And I feel like there's a really, I'm having trouble grasping it, but I feel like the whole running around to try to keep multiple plates from falling and crashing is in itself a really great metaphor. I also liked posing to the Pompeii tourist, once a vital man. I like this all the way through, but this is the last part I'll comment on that really speaks to me, is two things come to mind. First of all, how people love to take pictures of anything and everything, even when they should be helping people. You know, they want to be taking pictures instead of helping. The other thing it makes me think of is somebody who sells out, like somebody who uses their fame to promote a product or an idea that maybe they didn't necessarily believe in the first place, but they've reached that point where they're willing to sell themselves out. I think it's an excellent write and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. I came up with the saying birds of a feather flock together, but I much rather prefer yours, Pam. and that was from the first and the last stanza. My favorite stanza, though, mainly because it flows off the tongue, I must admit that part of it is, what's the word for it? Indistinguishable, at least with my knowledge of poetry. But beat Shelley in the dash, shot the put of Yeats, believed in Nietzsche, gold from dross. And Nietzsche claimed the exemplary human being must craft his or her own identity through self-realization and do so without relying on anything transcending that life, much like Tom's comment, such as God or a soul. And search for gold is at odds with that. At least that's my take on that element of it. I thought it was a great write. And Tom, did you have a poem to bring to the board today?
Or yeah, are you commenting? I posted it. I posted
okay,
it.
Okay, bear with me for one moment. I will jump back into... Okay, one moment. I'm just going to wrap your poem. Aha, got it. Okay. All right, so when you're ready, Tom, if you'd like to read up next.
Yeah, this is sort of my post-birthday poem, which ended at midnight. Okay, it's Declaration. We are the planetary petri dish for the effect of gravity and time upon the ubiquitous infection, life. How we survive and then overcome will determine the extent this bubble in the foam of possibility remains or pops. Self-awareness allows the end to be addressed as poignant. Our awareness, our curiosity, our determination provides for the only probability where we are not at the affect of this experiment of life's worth. We can continue to commit suicide, this ego-driven need to be top dog of this dung heap, and to hell with all else. Or we can choose to confront the reality. We will not survive if we do not overcome ourselves, the gravity well that pins us to earth, and the pace of time that buries us. What will it be? TV dinners for old-timers with broken teeth? Or the freedom from this need to glorify ignorance?
Wow, Tom, firstly, happy birthday. So
thank
it's your birthday today?
Oh, no. Well, it was August 10th. And even though this still feels
okay.
Like August because I haven't gone to bed yet, it's now August 11th.
Well, happy birthday for yesterday, firstly.
Oh,
and
I
have to say that I'm drawn to this section here. We can continue to commit suicide, this ego-driven need to be top dog of this dunghill, and to hell with all else. Or we can choose to confront the reality we will not survive if we do not overcome ourselves. The very profound lines in a very profound poem. And I think the other section I was drawn to was the beginning hook. We are the planetary petri dish for the effects of gravity and time upon the ubiquitous infection of life. Never so true as it at the moment, not only just with the pandemic underway and the ignorance it seems to bring up in people, that's especially prevalent at the moment here in Sydney. We've got a lot of people that are doing the right thing that are getting vaccinated so we can get out of lockdown, and then we've got the other camp that just refuses to do anything except maybe travel to another destination outside of Sydney with COVID. So
yeah.
So that's
let
the
me
first
tell you what
example.
A
I am. Yeah. And then just recently in the last day or two, they released an article in Australia saying that already we're looking at having catastrophic temperature increases from due to climate change. that we're looking at a 1.5 degree Celsius change by 2030, which is 10 years earlier, if not 20 years earlier, than they had actually modelled. And we have a government here in power that refuses to do anything about it, you know? So that's what it brought to mind there. So what will it be, TV dinners for old-timers with broken teeth or freedom from the need to glorify ignorance? Well said. Well said. And, Captain, what were your thoughts?
Oh, I really enjoy this. This is an indictment of global stupidity and the arrogance of man to think that they can do things that they can up to the ball of dirt they live on and then have them just fix themselves. Or it's the laissez-faire, I don't have to worry about it, because by the time that happens, I'm going to be dead. How many times have you heard that? I was like, yes, that's a really good solution. I'm going to die in debt. What the hell? But I really, we are the planetary petri dish. That is a marvelous line, especially considering what's going on globally with pandemic. And the fact that we are the massive deforestation of rainforests, and my belief when you dig up rainforests and you deprive we beasties, and that's what I call viruses and germs, we beasties. If you deprive the we beasties of their natural habitat, they're going to go someplace else to live, and they may come living in your lungs. You know, and that's because of this we've experienced Ebola. Because of this, now we're having the COVID, and it's I like your testimony here. That we can continue to commit suicide, this ego-driven need to be top dog of this dunghill, and to hell with all else. You're right. There are so many people out there that are so contemptuous of their environment. It's a self-gratification on a massive scale. You really have captured it here so well. And I don't know if there's anybody around that our age that remembers TV dinners besides Pam. But I don't think anyone eats them anymore. It's all fast food.
Right. Oh, I know. I could have put in fast food. But TV dinner seems much more appropriate.
Well, it has its period. It has its generational poignancy. But self-awareness allows the end to be addressed as poignant. I don't know if this is a stream of consciousness or this feels like you just sat down and it came pouring out of your brain.
There's actually a lot of background thought into this. I mean, if you you've done enough physics to understand the importance of the gravity well and how that prevents us from leaving effectively or in a cost-effective fashion. And the other thing that we seem to, even though Einstein once called it a petty little counting problem, time, we have never really found a way to confront time other than to measure it. And we haven't really found a way to free ourselves from gravity. And focusing on those two might do us much better than focusing on how we can be king of the hill, you know?
I think the difficulty is not confronting time, but stopping to waste it. You know, as it's, people tend to have tomorrow on their mind, and tomorrow it belongs to no one. And I think you've really highlighted this in that this headlong flight we have as a culture, as a species toward this you can't understand this passage for self-destruction that we have. And it seems like people are blissfully ignorant of the fact that they're doing themselves in. And I really like the way you've captured it in here. We can continue to commit suicide, or we can continue, or we can choose to confront the reality. And I don't know about gravity wells, but my temporal rifts are always my problem.
I really enjoy this. If you really thought about it,
and we'll just grab a comment from Pam, guys.
Broke free of time, everything would become possible. Because
yeah, we got with Pam weighing on this.
Yeah, I would absolutely love to comment on this. Thank you. This is a powerful and a hard-hitting right, and I like that this is what you chose to focus on for a birthday right. The whole idea that there's so much potential out there to survive, but not to survive, to really move on with life. I like the imagery and the metaphor of how we survive and then overcome will determine the extent that this bubble in the foam of possibility remains or pops. I like the phrase foam of possibility. Self-awareness allows the ends to be addressed. I think, well, for any part of life or any part of ourselves, we need to have a self-awareness of our own behavior. We can continue to commit suicide, this ego-driven need to be top dog of this drug hill and hell with all the rest. I really like how those lines speak about the greed and the constant struggle of, you know, to be the top dog of the dunghill, which really doesn't even seem like, much of a top dog at all. So there's really a lot of bite to the line. And I really like and appreciate that. And, of course, the question at the end, or freedom from the need to glorify ignorance. The glorifying of ignorance seems to be something that happens quite often, and it happens because of greed, because of stubbornness, and, as you say, because of that need to be top dog. Just an excellent right and very well done.
Well, thank you.
And next we have a poem by Captain.
Is she at it again? My goodness. All right. I can't get that woman to shut up. I'm going to by saying that this was actually written directly after watching the HBO documentary about Olympic athletes after the Olympic Games, and it was entitled The Weight of Gold. And it was a captivating documentary, as most HBO documentaries are. However, I was stunned at some of the information that it put forward in terms of the suicide rate of elite athletes and the fact that many of them can't earn a living because they think this is going to lead to financial success, and it doesn't. And then when they've achieved their goal, then it's the where do we go from here, boys? So this is what prompted me to write The Golden Burden. The starting gun fires, the competition kicks off, the music starts, the performance begins, the moment has arrived. This is the moment I have dedicated my mortal existence to, been preparing for, working toward, dreaming of all my life. I have met the challenges, endured the sacrifices, trained for an eternity. I am finally here, and the eyes of the world are on me. I am a competitor. I am confident, self-assured. I am unbeatable, convinced I will win, and I do. I win for my country. I win for my family, for myself. I feel special, fulfilled. I proudly wear the medals and bask in the adulation. But then it is over. The conveyor belt stops, and I make my exit. I'm so young. I'm so unprepared for the unanswered questions which surface. Have I lived the dream? Was it all worth it, the years of my life, the personal sacrifices? What has my life stood for? Who am I now? Will I be remembered? What was the point? What did I accomplish? And what happens after this? The medals weigh heavily. My rewards are now my burdens, and there is no way to train to find the answers. End poem.
Thank you, Bobby. That was a great read and a great poem. And Pam, would you like to start off the comments for this poem?
Oh, absolutely. I'd be happy to. This is a strong one and an important subject. I'm glad you gave us a little bit of the details in the beginning. I like the first-person narrative, which draws the reader in, grabs your attention, keeps it, and, you know, really makes us see through the Olympic athlete's eyes how everything they trained for was for that one moment. And when they win that gold, there's the question of, what now? What am I now? Will I be remembered? What was the point? What did I accomplish? And what happens after this? And I really like the imagery of the medals weigh heavily. My rewards are now my burdens. I can only imagine that once you've won a gold, just anything where you've exceeded or success, you know, become such a success at, it must be difficult to go back to regular life, or even if, you know, you're starting to train to try again, you know, to compete with yourself must be very challenging. And I like how you get that across with your writing. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you.
And Tom, what were your thoughts?
The thing about this that gets me, because I immediately start expanding it into other things, the extent to which when we become goal-oriented, nobody tells us what to expect after the goal. And I've met people who were high competitors who, whether they succeeded in making it to the Olympics or not, told me that the hardest part was re-entering back into society because they found people didn't care about excellence. In fact, they didn't want you to be excellent, and they didn't want to be excellent. And that really freaked them out because that had been their whole life, was to be excellent. And they thought this was what everybody really wanted. And that was part of what made them strive so hard, was they convinced themselves of this. And it's similar to the Vietnam vets I worked with, who even if they, you know, dealt with the feeling rejected by people for doing something they thought was right, was the lack of coherence in the society they returned to and the self-destructiveness they found in the society. So the whole reason of fighting for the good and the wonderful USA, when they really stopped and started looking, they were so sure that was there, and the disappointment. I mean, all of this goes back to this idea about when it's over and the conveyor belt stops and I make my exit. It's when you get your goal, what's next? I mean, I even know for myself, I was involved in one of those self-actualization groups, and all my life it had been about getting people to recognize me as being somebody who was a strong, gentle human being. And suddenly I realized that everybody saw me that way. And all of a sudden I was floundering because I didn't know how I was supposed to, you know, what I was supposed to, where I was supposed to, because everything had been built around getting this magical approval. And when I got the approval, then I'd be ready for what? You know, I think this just makes very poignant and very, very immediate and very clear that we have to have an inner foundation that's greater than the goals we're striving for, or when we get there, we're lost. Because I think, have I lived the dream? Was it worth it? The years of my life, the personal sacrifice, what has my life stood for? Those are really important questions.
Michael Phelps was one of the athletes that they interviewed and featured on this documentary. And if you look at the information that's available on the internet, you'd be amazed at how much trouble, how much difficulty he got into after his Olympic gold win. And this was years down the road because he didn't know what to do with himself. He was actually,
right.
I think he was jailed for DWI.
Yeah,
because he was just spiraling out of control. He's finally got himself, his feet back under him. But he said he was firmly set on the path of self-destruction. And I was really mm-hmm. struck by this in the documentary. So that's why I was compelled to write about it, because it was not something I'd ever thought about.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I was floored by the fact that so many of them went, when it's all about excellence, you know what you're supposed to do. But when you stop and you turn to a regular job, and you're amazed that nobody really seems to care about excellence. And that always really...
If I can interject, Tom's just dropped. I'll see if he calls back. But just in the meantime, just to add to that, there was a 2019 statement from the International Olympic Committee highlighting that mental ill health was common among elite athletes. And it also emphasized how much more needs to be done to improve the recognition and treatment of mental health issues to support athletes and reduce the stigma around this topic. I was particularly drawn to the medals weigh heavily. My rewards are now my burdens, and there is no way to train to find the answers. I thought it was a great poem. Is anyone there?
Yes, we're well. Me and Bobby are here, and Tom hasn't come back. He probably had to go. It's late at night for him, or either that, or his phone accidentally dropped like mine, and maybe he'll call back. But as for now, I think if you want to just move on to the next poem.
Yeah, I will do that. One moment. Okay. So next we have a SoundCloud, and I get to flex my skills. So this is a poem by Geraldine Green, and I think Captain's actually dropped as well.
Well, she's still showing, but she must not be able to hear us.
Phone call so she can call back.
Yeah, maybe just hang up on her. Yeah, hit the red X.
Okay.
And then tell her to try, and, one of us can tell her to call back.
Okay. I'll just put the SoundCloud up now, and then we can figure that out in the background.
Olympian, written and read by Gerald Green. Epigram. I was built this way for a reason, so I'm going to use it. Simone Biles. I watched Olympic athletes do their thing. Each person seemed alert and well-prepared. With coaches, they have worked for 4 long years, and not a one is unequipped or scared. The best have bodies shaped for what they do. Thin torsos and long legs make racers run. Strong arms and legs and back help lifters lift, and winners smile because they're number one. Athletic form determines where they go. Proclivities are measured by a coach, and then a regimen is made to steer the pilgrim with a customized approach. I'd love to jump or run a marathon, preparing with travail without regret. And then, like them, I'd be Olympian, with goals of stardom made of skill and sweat. But some of us are void of what we want, with spastic muscles or a weakened heart. There is no passage to Olympic gold like those who have a gift and stand apart. So I'm content to watch them work and win. I cheer them on in front of my TV, saluting every winner with my voice, acknowledging superiority. End poem.
Thank you for the SoundCloud there, Gerald. I thought it had great flow and meter, and I noticed that you actually put that it's a neo-formalist type of poetry with iambic pentameter. And above that, the message was one of measured adoration for the efforts that Olympic athletes undergo to reach their ultimate opportunity to shine. I was drawn to, so I'm content to watch them work and win. I cheer them on in front of my TV, saluting every winner with my voice, acknowledging superiority. This message, with the lack of crowds this year at Tokyo 2020, which was delayed a year, was perhaps the most resonant with me. Families and friends and fans had to cheer from the sidelines this year, sending positive vibes from the armchair next to the TV rather than saluting sideline at the events themselves. And I think the athletes had to self-motivate more so than ever before in the preparation and participation for the Tokyo Olympics. Very well done. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
Well, I have to say, I really liked this one. As always, there's kind of, like you said, there's a meter, a flow to his writing. And there is also a sense of admiration. I really like that quote from Simone Biles. I was built this way for a reason, so I'm going to use it. The way he said, okay, I really like this. Athletic form determines where they go. Proclivities are measured by a coach, and the regimen is made to steer the pilgrim with a customized approach. And I like that he uses the word pilgrim because it is almost like a pilgrimage. You know, some people make a journey to certain temples or certain areas they consider holy. And you know, for some people, that temple is reaching that goal, and they'll... The training is the journey, and so I like that. And let's see what else. But some of us are void of what we want, with spastic muscles or a weakened heart. There's no passage to Olympic gold like those who have a gift and stand apart. So I'm content to watch them work and win. I cheer them on in front of my TV, saluting every winner with my voice, acknowledging superiority. And I like that he is supportive of those who have been blessed with a gift. But he also acknowledges there's those of us who suffer or, you know, have bodies that are, you know, pains that, you know, make us not material to win the Olympics. I think it's important to remember that doesn't mean that we don't, you know, find what, you know, blessings or gifts in other areas of life. We're just not going to be, we're always going to be, well, in itself, I think being a person who cheers other people on
Olympia,
is a gift.
Written and read so, by Gerald Green. Epigram.
What? Oh, I'm sorry. That's
my bad. I must have had it. Is it still going
okay.
Or is it stopped?
I'm like. Okay.
Yeah, I'm timing out people now by just, like, sampling SoundCloud.
I was like, my first thought was, I hear a man's voice. My second thought was, why is this man interrupting my talking? But, you know, As always, Gerald does wonderful SoundCloud. I really enjoy his straightforward style. And I like the way he has that gift of encouragement and that gift of cheering for other people. So excellent write and very well done. And There seems to be this tradition that whenever you're learning the studio, whenever you're learning the phones, the gremlins have to come in and decide that something has to go wrong.
I know, right?
Because I've had it happen to every person I've ever watched be trained, including myself, is there will always be some little glitch. And unfortunately, your glitch is that the two other people we had on here cannot call back in.
I thought so. Yeah, I've just seen that captain's going, is anyone else out there? Hello, on the board. I suppose I actually had this happen about a month ago. So let's just hope that Pam, fingers crossed, knock on wood, especially since you got that superstition contest going, that it at least keeps the two of us on board for the rest of the show.
Right? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, God. Well, you know what? It wouldn't be a trial by fire without the gremlins, would it?
Right, and I think that's what they do. They come in with their little matchsticks, waving them around, and say, let's see what kind of fire, and, you know, we can start. But absolutely.
Yeah,
they're like, jump in the deep end. Well, that's all right. At least there's the two of us, fingers crossed, knock on wood.
I might read the next one, and then we'll take turns, and then hopefully, I'd say quite possibly that it will be the two of us for the rest of the show, because I've had this happen before, and very rarely does it work the way
you
want it
to. Yeah, I noticed.
But anyway, I'll start this poem. It's by Tree Tran, and it's called Mountain Biking for Gold. The moment was here. On your mark, get set. His muscles pumped up. Adrenaline flow increased. Hemodynamics powerful. Go! He began pedaling in top speed, giving all he had built from years of training, feeling confident and unpanicky, breathing regularly and pulse rapid. He glanced behind to see whether anyone was catching up while concentrating on his course. He rode for over an hour without resting as lactic acid began to build up. He kept on without giving up. Tom Pittick knew one chance was all he needed to get gold. He strived harder until he reached the finish line, knowing the gold medal was glistening in his mind. When he crossed the white line, he raised his hands high in victory. Great Britain had now another Olympic gold. For the first time in Tokyo, Tom felt better than ever. End poem. And what were your thoughts there, Pam?
I like how Tri Tran centers his poetry, and that is a word. Do you know the definition of that word?
So I looked it up. It's actually the dynamics of flow of blood. So it's like the blood pumping through your system.
Oh, that is really
I
cool.
Know, right?
It makes sense with the word adrenaline. Well, you know, I really like Afasiana always said, when poetry gives you the opportunity to learn a new word, that is so awesome. So I like, this is very visceral, very physical. In the description of the movement, not only the movement of the athlete where he says he began pedaling in top speed, but also how he describes the movement of the muscles, the adrenaline, the flow. And I like that he puts goal with an exclamation point and, you know, puts it all by itself. So it really emphasizes the importance of that starting moment. He rolled for over an hour without resting as lactic acid began to build up. He kept on without giving up. And I like that he throws little bits of science in there, like mentioning that, you know, when runners in this case a cyclist, you know, is doing that much exercise, lactic acid does build up. He raised his hands high in victory. Great Britain had now another Olympic gold for the first time in Tokyo. Tom felt better than ever. I like that he really puts us into the place of this sudden moment of victory and, you know, how good it must have felt. Even though I'm, you know, obviously fermenting the lactic acid buildup and all that, he was probably, I'm guessing, in a lot of pain, as many Olympic athletes are, because they push themselves. But, you know, there's such he brings us into the high and the joy of the moment. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pat. And I think we may have a caller that has made it through. I will just double check. Area code 703.
It is me. I'm back.
Yay. Welcome back.
That was bizarre.
Oh, man. Oh,
the gremlins had me
unexpected.
In their grasp. Yes. Well, I'm back. I think I only missed one poem.
Yes, yes. Did you get a chance to hear the poem on hold or have a read of it?
No, actually, I was too desperately trying. I was actually trying to call other numbers to see if it was my connectivity or what the heck was going on. So I finally got through one of my friends.
Gremlin.
Yeah, it's a blog talk gremlin thing. It's happened before, and we're very fortunate that you're able to call back.
We have our very own specialized gremlins. Well, thank you. I'm back.
All right. Well, I'll make a comment on this poem. I hope this isn't being a pain in the ass. I might have to I'll go anyway. So I think Try raised an important point when he referred to the lactic acid beginning to build up, and he kept on without giving up. In that, for all the training, for all the superior physique, there comes a time when an athlete in any event either rallies and gives it their all, even though they're hurting, even though it would be easier to give up, and that one person will eventually take the gold medal. And the build in the poem was great. I really enjoyed the stanza. His muscles pumped up, adrenaline flow increased, hemodynamics powerful. Great little poem. And with that, I will move on to the next poem by Eric Svensson. Put that in the forum. And Captain... when I put it in there, if you can give it a read, that would be great.
Did you, like, send it to someone else, put it in a different room? Because I refreshed, and it's not in Late Night Poets.
Oh, okay. Hang on a second. I just put it in there now. I'll paste it again just in case.
Oh, there it is. I see it.
That's good. Captain is being uncharacteristically quiet. I'm wondering if she's either on mute or whether she's dropped again.
Oh, I was checking. I am. I'm not sure what's going on tonight. Wheels within wheels. By Eric Svensson. Nordic ice blue rings, Europe. Sprightly canary yellow circles, Asia. Obsidian black luster necklace surrounds Africa. Green fields, heart spheres, Australia. Rooted red orbs, the Americas. Wheels within wheels, a much needed armistice ring relay. Athletes come out to play. Polarization of five continents, flower bright, burns the Olympic flame. Grindstone dedication culminates in celebration. Nations lay aside swords, bring out love of sport plowshares. Though competition is feisty, fierce, and hearts with angst-pierced individuals become countries. Common ground is found in healthy rival revelry. Wheels within wheels. Mighty Mojo Cogs turn for weeks. Banting flags announce the greatest show on earth. Celebration of our tenacious human spirit. United we stand in celebration of the human body. Lay aside cares, concerns, and contradictions. Fierce, feisty competition inspires tomorrow's Olympians. Noble intention blends primary continental colors. Crescendo white celebration is achieved. Fly, O noble white peace dove. Bear thy victorious olive branch. Go for bold, boisterous gold athletes, for you know gold melts at 1,948 degrees Fahrenheit. Sweat, determination, and a hard-to-find alloy called guts brought you to the winner's podium. Consecrate each human spirit celebratory moment. End poem.
Great read, Captain. I really enjoyed this poem. I like the message of unity that is present in the first three stanzas with the reference to the five continents. The grindstone dedication culminates in celebration. Nations lay aside swords and bring out love of sports plowshares. It's an important message, and I think the athletes, at least that I've seen interviewed after the completion of the Tokyo 2020 Games, said there was a real feeling of unity that that their preparations had been affected, their countries were in unity from the combined effects of the pandemic, but they still made it there, albeit without an audience. And there was a greater reliance on each other and just a jubilation that they'd finally made it to the event. So I just thought it was a really well done write. And I like the way that he, that Eric incorporated the prompt in the last stanza also. And what were your thoughts, Pam?
Yeah, I really liked this too. I always enjoy Eric's style. Wonderful, strong imagery. I really like the grindstone dedication, formulation, and celebration. Nations lay aside swords, bring out love of sports. It reminds us that as much as it's a competition where we're countries competing against country, it's also an opportunity to share something that many people around the world have in common. And we all have our differences. I mean, you know, like, for example, there's parts of you know, there's countries that get way more excited about soccer, that are, as they call it, football, than we ever will in America, you know, or cricket or whatever their game is. So there are differences, but at the same time, we all have that shared love of competing, not competing, but watching, having pride in our country. In watching someone represent our country. I like go for bold, boisterous gold athletes, for you know gold melts at 1,948 degrees Fahrenheit, sweat, determination, and hard to find alloy. Now, he fits the prompt in there, but reminds us that the most important thing isn't the gold, because gold can be melted down, you know, but what stays behind in a, you know, because, and it stays behind even after we pass on, because other people will remember it. You know, how the gold-winning medalists strive to do their best and did their best and represented their country, hopefully in an honorable way. Which, you know, I think there's really only been a small handful of times in Olympic events that it, you know, things have happened that have been questionable. But, you know, the poem, I mean, just really just a wonderful celebration of that which brings us together. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. That was an excellent comment. And, Captain, what were your thoughts?
I really enjoyed the way he starts the piece with the symbology of the five colors and the different continents that they symbolize. As when I was setting this up, I was reading about that, and I was glad that he introduced that in there because I think it's important for people to know where that emblem came from. And I like the way he says he has the refrain "wheels within wheels," and the fact that he does make a point of stressing that even though this is a competition, it is a friendly, it's camaraderie among athletes. And it reminded me of again, back to the 1939 Olympics, where Jesse Owens was trying to do the long jump and was having trouble. And his competitor, his rival, Lutz Long, actually came out there and helped him. And this was his German competitor. And he became lifelong friends with Lutz until he was killed in the war. But it did piss off Hitler. But I also noticed that he incorporated the prompt into the last stanza, which I thought was very clever. I really liked it. And like Pam said, it stresses the fact that while the award is gold or silver or bronze, what really stands apart from that is the human spirit and the stamina and the guts it takes to get there. So I really appreciate, this is a very, very fine piece.
Thank you, Captain. And Pam, would I be able to get you to read David Meyerhoff's piece? It's on the board when you're ready.
I would be happy to do that. All right, this is The Quest for Purpose by David Meyerhoff, and it goes like this. I bounded from garden to yard, seeking the animal none label, but all can identify. In my agony, I stumbled over rocks and fell farther from the ground, was deeper, into a pool of low energy. My quarry, even more distant, I straightened, brushed off, and resumed my chase, hugging the idea that when I caught up with this ghost of creatures, I would slough off all warts and reach my plateau. Motorists and passerbys looked at me like a figure out of step, while homeowners just plants and gardens were overturned. In this rush to the goal that wasn't to find an animal that isn't for rewards that aren't, onward I trekked through bushes and scrapes, loud ringing lines and mud pie fillers of a trench. I cannot clarify my goals, but cannot hide my fear of standing still. End poem.
Thank you, Pam. That was a great read. And thank you, David, for the poem. I just thought it was a really interesting, atypical response to the prompt. And the prompt was, our drives are not what they seem on the surface. It was an interesting, almost philosophical poem about striving for a goal that may not otherwise be straightforward, objective to observers around us. Now, particularly, I suppose, relevant to the Olympic Games, because it doesn't resonate with everyone. There are people out there that believe that there are many other things that we should be focusing on at the moment. But I think the message of hope that it sends to people is important in that respect. And I don't know, it almost seems to me as if the observers, particularly here, motorists and passers-by, looked at me like a figure out of step, while homeowners just looked askance as potted plants and gardens were overturned in this rush to the goal that wasn't to find an animal that isn't for rewards that aren't. The observers have no idea what he's doing in chasing his goal. And his goal appears to be not standing still in this poem. in a metaphoric sense. What were your thoughts, Captain?
It reminded me a bit of the portion of Forrest Gump, where he gets Jenny leaves him without warning. He's standing on his front porch, and then he says, "I just started running." And he says, "I ran across town. I ran across the great state of Alabama, and he kept running for 3 years." And his solution was simply to run, was to not stand still. And sometimes, and as he says, our drives are not what they seem on the surface. Sometimes the therapy is in the doing. Sometimes when I was, I would get angry, I would go to the gym and I would push weights and I would have some really awesome workouts because I was so adrenaline filled. That the answer was to push it out with pumping iron. And that could be onward I trek through bushes and scrapes. I cannot clarify my goals, but I cannot hide my fear of standing still. And that may have been just his form of therapy for himself. And it's not going to be readily apparent to the casual observer, but it doesn't trouble him that it isn't. But I do think this is a very philosophical piece, and I think it has some wonderful underlying meaning to it that really merits examination.
Thank you, Captain. And Pam, you read it. What did you think?
Yeah, I really liked that this was a different kind of response to the chosen topic. I like the idea that this person is willing to move forward with their dream, with their goal, despite their own agony, despite the fact that they fall down and have to, you know, get back up, and you know, and that the fact that, you know, people really and it does. I like that it. You use a metaphorical sense, the idea of people watching you do all the steps you need to do to reach a goal and kind of looking at you like you're crazy, but it doesn't matter to this person. All they want is to keep going forward, and that it's almost like they have those blinders on where they're just focused on that end goal no matter what anybody else thinks. And I think it's excellent light and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. That was a great comment. And next we have a poem by Navita. And I'll get Captain to give this one a read.
All righty. Let's see. The Quest to Excel by Navita. Is your tryst with destiny as you try to give your best, coming once in 4 years, unleashing the zestful quest. You work and train, uphold your single aim, cynosure of all eyes, giving the ultimate in each try. Today the nation stands behind you, proud and regaling, as the sheen of metals shines through all things that were once towering. Your grit, determination, and power to excel have been rewarded. Go ahead, for your feat has been recorded. Tears and jubilation, holding aloft the flag, marks the celebration. Walking together to the podium marks the distance covered. Looking towards the sky earmarks the excellence to be uncovered. End poem.
Thank you, Captain. That was a great read. I think Navita has captured the spirit of competitive sport and the Olympics in particular, especially with these lines. The notion of all eyes giving the ultimate in each try. Today, the nation stands behind you, proud and regaling as the sheen of metal shines through all things that were once towering. There are many sacrifices, injuries, obstacles to get to an Olympic medal. But take the likes of Peter Bowl, the Australian, who came fourth in the 800 metres men's final This was actually the best finish for an Australian in the men's 800 since the 1968 Olympics. He forced the pace of the athletes in what was a slow race and led out front till the last 200 metres. And in doing so, was an inspiration to us all. So I can't wait to see him run in Paris. And I just think it was a really interesting read and almost an homage to the Olympics. Very well done. And what were your thoughts, Pam?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. There was such a sense of spirit and celebration and enthusiasm and admiration for...
Uh-oh, we lost Pam. Are you there? Yeah, Pam just dropped. I'll give her a couple
everyone.
Of... I know, right? Here she is. I'll just bring her back online.
Yeah,
Hi, Pam.
Made it back pretty quickly. but, yeah, I don't know how much of my comments you heard, but it was an excellent write, and I just enjoyed the enthusiasm and the spirit of it.
I think you're right about these gremlins coming out of the woodworks as soon as I get behind the controls.
Right? Well, and it happens to everybody. Like you said, trial by fire.
That's it. And Bobby, what were your thoughts?
I think like Pam said, the spirit of the games is captured here quite well. And very concisely, the tryst with destiny is a great opening line. Working and training, and then representing your nation, and all the effort that goes behind it. This is it encapsulates from start to finish. I think the spirit and the intent of the games quite beautifully.
Thank you, Bobby. And next, I actually wrote a poem for the contest because we were a bit short on new rights. So I'll give this one a read. And it's called Stake Your Claim. My life is a steeplechase. Competitors yip at my heels like a chihuahua staking claim on the letterbox. Through duplicitous obstacles, I hurdle myself airborne, praying my feet find solid ground through the treacherous water pits that seek to rupture my Achilles ligaments. Farewell, for they have not yet collapsed. Their sails tackle and jibe with leeward winds, sheltered from the incoming squalls that buffet the island landmass. One chance is all you need. You have been thrown many a lifeline, like a tantrum-induced toddler. You are mine. End poem. And, Captain, did you want to start off the comments?
Certainly. I like your opening. My life is a steeplechase, competitorship at my heels. The visual imagery there is quite comical, and it's especially with the way little dogs carry on, like they're something grand chasing after you. It really has... A lot of the piece has a lot of energy to it. You feel the competitive urge and taking the chance, taking the risk. Fair weather sailors, farewell, for they have not yet collapsed. One chance is all you need. Boy, that's the truth. And how often that chance slips away from them. So elusively, like a tantrum-induced toddler, you, I, mine. That is a great concluding line. It sums up the competition quite aptly.
Thanks, Bobby. And what were your thoughts, Pam?
I think, well, first of all, this is a wonderful vignette, really just strong and thought-provoking imagery. I really like that you went with the chihuahuas because they really are those kind of like little yappy, yippy dogs that, you know, will easily chase and snap at the heels. Fairweather sailors fare well, for they have not yet collapsed their sails, tack, and jibe. What I like about this is it doesn't just touch on sports, but rather life and how oftentimes those who have fallen before and had to keep getting back up, you know, they learn, they know what they're doing, they've been through it before. And those who don't want to go through the hard work just simply try to hang on to the coattails and you know, take the pride in what they did, although they did nothing. I really like in the ending line how you has that you have been thrown many a lifeline like a tantrum-induced toddler, do I mine? Because, you know, you don't want to put work into it, so you want to grab what somebody else has put work into. So, excellent write and very well done.
Thanks, Pam. And now we've reached the end of the Olympics part of the show, and we're going to do some carryovers until for the next 40-odd minutes. And we've got a SoundCloud, which I will press play on now for Versus Goliath.
On Off by Versus Goliath.
Colosseum echoes roar, clangs, shouting. Bronze-clad gladiators smash steel. Several dead slaves eaten by lions hungry. Among the living, Maximus. Awe, awe, or was that just a movie? Blurred lines between real gore and practical effects, whose effectiveness increases based on individual's conduciveness toward hypnosis. You're being induced subtly, slowly, crazed. Sleep. Countdown backwards. Niet. 9, 8, Nelson, X, Ev, Roof, Re, Ut, Nyon. Watch pendulum tick. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Out like a light. Electricity still flows to the brain. An active acceptance of agreeable manipulation, a release of self momentarily to allow control to be subjective, a subject injected with conflagration. Burn it down, ruin it all, destroy the ones who... With the snap of my fingers, wake up. Clicking bones fall down in place. Confusion is normal, serene ignorance. Thank the good doctor. Monochopsis stroll down street, chalk-outlined eyes stare, mouths word, feelings disgusted, eerie creaking in spinal cord, smells look like Bill Cosby feels, too soon monsoon roofies drop, violent storm, when will it stop, with the snap of my fingers. End poem.
Holy crap, Versus, that was an amazing SoundCloud. I just have to say, man, like, I can't believe you actually said 10, 9, 8, 7, 6 and they're on backwards. That was, I wouldn't have been able to do that justice like you did. So just for anyone that is listening, this was a take on the prompt, violence isn't always evil. What's evil is the infatuation with violence. And I think the idea of surrendering yourself to hypnosis is an apt one. No one can be forced to perform an act they wouldn't otherwise do under hypnotic release, but it acts as a subconscious prompt to commit acts of violence. And it's almost the same in some respects that you can be incensed to commit acts of violence, but our infatuation with violence, gore, and the macabre slowly whittles away at our appetite for peace and whets our appetite for violence. And my favorite part was, with the snap of my fingers, wake up, clicking bones, fall down in place, confusion is normal, serene ignorance, thank the good doctor. Very well done. And what were your thoughts, Pam?
Yeah, that was a really cool SoundCloud and the write. And I like that he kind of put in the idea of being put under a trance. I also like that he mentions the blurred lines between real gore and practical effects, whose effectiveness is increased based on individual conductiveness. There's just some really intriguing thought there. And And then the clicking bones fall down in place. Confusion is normal. Serene ignorance. Thanks, the good doctor. I think there, to me, there's that kind of idea that when somebody, it's hard to explain that, but, you know, the whole, there's kind of a biting, sardonic feel to the line, thanks, the good doctor. Like, you're supposed to thank somebody for putting you in a state of confusion. Monsoon roofies drop violent storms. When will it stop? I feel like that has a lot of to do with some of the effects of medication, but also the effects of the manipulation of the mind, of the psyche. It's just an intriguing ride all the way through and very well done.
Thanks, Pam. That was a very insightful comment. I really, I missed the part about the medication, but that makes perfect sense. And, Captain, what were your thoughts?
I also enjoyed this. I like his interpretation of his selective prompt that violence isn't always evil. What's evil is the infatuation with violence. I like the way he interpreted that blurred lines between real gore and practical effects, whose effectiveness increase based on the individual's conductiveness towards hypnosis and his sleep. Very clever taking 10 to 1, actually backwards, which I thought that was very, it was clever, very imaginative. But I really enjoyed the last stanza, Monochopsis, stroll down street, chalk outlined eyes stare, mouth word feelings disgusted, eerie creaking in spinal cord. And Monochopsis, when I read it the first time, I had to look it up. It's a subtle but persistent feeling of being out of place, as maladapted to your surroundings, like a seal on a beach. Kind of like you rented your body for the weekend and you haven't figured out quite how it works. It's very imaginative, and it gives a good illustration of the disorienting feeling of too soon, monsoon roofies drop, violent storm, the disorientation that you feel when you're under medication. You know, like your head is not attached to your shoulders. It's floating about a foot and a half above your neck, and it's you get a very strange feeling. But I also like the and Pam said exactly what I was thinking, sardonic. Thank the good doctor. That has a definite edge to it. This is a very edgy, very biting piece of the writing, and I really, really enjoyed his interpretation.
Thanks, Captain. That was a great comment. And I'll give the next one a read. So this one's by Phyllida Lochlanark, and it's called Ermanaric's Horses. Foxes lurk through the land with lies, playfully push a king to kneel by telling tales of tricks. She, swan woman warrior waiting for the fall, the filthy frill of fiends. She has white wings, feathers freckled with dirt, unwashable, grounded. He, rapist on the roads, roaming greedily through districts, nourishing nocturnal hunger, mocking maidens, make the day, and then, eeny meeny, bleed or burn to stop all seeds from settling. The equestrian queen of Goths, ropes tie knots, sliding slots and stones reveal red spots. Yes, four horses to linking limbs, she doesn't holler. Cardinals calling for her crest, now ripping off her chest. End poem. And I'll get Captain to start off the comments on this one. And if you want to read the author note, that'd be great too.
Certainly. Apparently this is what they said about violence. Frank Herbert, Monarch. Monarch was a real person, a king of the Goths who killed his woman by tying her limbs to four different horses and then frightened them so that they tore her apart. And this was, in fact, a very common way. The Mongols used to do that, too. It basically sends all four pieces into four different directions. I enjoy this. This is a rather brutal, but it's a very good light. Mocking maidens made the day, and bleeder burns, stopped ulting. Equestrian queen of Goths. This is really kind of brutal. The way she defines the king and how he does away with her, with his woman.
Thank you, Captain. And what were your thoughts?
I really like that she tells such an epic tale with really not a lot of lines. And yet, you know, she introduces us to the surrounding area, to the woman, to the man, and with this visceral imagery introduces us to the violence, the violent act of her death. And, the unfortunate irony that she was the equestrian queen of the gods, that she was, I would guess, known for her horsemanship, and to die in such a violent and tragic way. I just think this is definitely a hard-hitting write, and the tale, a part of history I'd never known about before, so I always enjoy the opportunity to learn something new, and this was very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Great comment.
Yeah, this was actually written to There Is No Escape, We Pay for the Violence of Our Ancestors by Frank Herbert. And I think it was just a terrifying depiction of violence. And then to find out the person was, in fact, actually real and these women suffered at the hands of such violence was deplorable. As you would put it, Captain, gut-punching answer to the prompt. And I think that Heggy has actually really displayed how all these lives lost, all these women maimed, it would have had like a visceral impact on their immediate family, but also all those ancestry lines that would have been expunged as well, had a lasting impact. Very well done. Very raw and visceral, but that does not take away the fact that it was a very well done poem. And with that, I will see who we've got next. We've got a poem by Thomas Blacken. And Pam, if you could give this a read, that would be great.
I'd be happy to. All right. This is a Pyrrhopus by Thomas Blacken. And it goes like this. And we go, violence, even well-intentioned, always rebounds upon oneself. Lao Tzu. Wolves calling at the moon, and alley cat howl is at a what with that arch back, a gnarling that is in a word violent. I never dignified insults with a smile, she said knowingly. It was never necessary to submit to some shallow indecency by even remotely feeling flattered. I do not feel remorse, she said, is what it is, and if it is violent, the word hung in the air. Walking by the excavation site, they turn their head, but not to greet me, she continued, not the way Mama would. I'd get home from school, or the way my cousins hooped and hollered when I walked into the yard. Nah, these fools, they simply turned as if I was market and I was available at a word, or as if I was a found fruit where the joy in their salutation was not in any form of appreciation, but that of greedy, familiar twitch of a dog's lips slapping at meat exposed in the sun, or something foul and rotten to be devoured. That is where Roglio swung the rig against the pile, forms collapsed around the brittle edges, and the rescue workers work all through the night, excavating and pulling the men from the rubble, who incidentally all had wives, mothers, sisters, and daughters, who now whispered bitterly about the whole ordeal being unnecessary. If only the boys were not distracted by some flirtatious whore. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And thank you, Thomas, for the poem. I think that Thomas raised an important point in this piece, that the men who initially perpetrated the violence incidentally all had wives, mothers, sisters, and daughters, yet this did not stop them from objectifying the flirtatious whore. I was drawn to where the joy in their salutation was not in any form of appreciation, but that of greedy, familiar twitch of a dog's lips slapping at meat exposed in the sun, or something foul and rotten to be devoured, escalating the situation into a metaphoric rescue mission. The men had only themselves to blame in some respects, as Lao Tzu said, violence, even well-intentioned, always rebounds upon oneself. Great answer to the prompt. And what were your thoughts, Captain?
I've always enjoyed the philosophy of Lao Tzu, and this is a good, profound interpretation to the prompt. I think it illustrates, I think, something that we've all been subject to is the objectivization of women by men, and they think that we like that. And I like the way discussed in this piece. It was never necessary to submit to some shallow indecency by even remotely feeling flattered. Exactly so. It's a very, very good description, a narrative of how to respond, or how she responds to the cat calls or wolf whistles or what have you. These fools, they simply turn as if it was market and I was available at a word, or as I was found fruit, where the joy in their salutation was not any familiar form of appreciation, but that of a green familiar twitch. That's so descriptive of the actions. Really well done. And I like the way she summarizes the fact that, yes, they forget that they all have wives, mothers, sisters, and daughters who may be subjected to the same thing, but they don't have that wisdom to see that. That's a very, I think that's a very a strong, powerful light.
Agreed. Agreed, Captain. Great comment. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, wow. This is, it does make a really important point about, you know, harassment and how the how people don't think about consequences of their actions. I like how she, Thomas, uses that when he talks about the twitch of a dog's lips slapping at meat exposed in the sun or something falling on to be devoured, like how oftentimes people, especially women, are objectified how there's, he brings it in with the whole thought of that it becomes all about them being bitter towards her flirtations, whether they were actually there or not, rather than, you know, pondering, you know, the actions, the choices that the men made. So just a powerful write and very well done.
So spot on, Pam. That's what I found. By the sounds of it, she wasn't being what they termed a flirtatious whore in the first place. That was their take on it, to admit their responsibility for it. And we've got another poem up from the Violence Contest by Diana Thorison. And Captain, if you could give this one a read, that would be greatly appreciated.
American Man by Diana Thorison. The ursine embrace of Iona's waves is a clarion call. We never looked for the saint of little things. A Welsh magician found and welcomed us with a hot cross bun of unpainted timber ceilings. English Celtic crows laughed at the millennia and sealed our foreheads with sycamore seeds. Memory is a source of mildewed glyphs. You write fiery letters to the end of this war and that coup, as if the foie gras and the mortar could scorch the anther-born Gaia draped in rosemary harvest. My language of pearls sounds dark and Rhenish to you. Gaul and Germania are crawling with black water. Soldiers, so you only sanction the blitz of diamonds. I fed our sleeping ray of four pink frangipani flowers. When your mother's grave opened its brown mouth to seize us where the preternatural lions rip. There are still dewy Aphrodites by St. David's stone walls. The night wears the marmot coat of evening perfumes. My window is no longer starless when time continuously swings into a deep, serpent-filled valley of dreams. End poem.
Thank you, Captain. That was a lovely read. It doesn't matter what I throw at you, you still manage to get through it with
I'll tell you my secret.
I'm
able to actually read ahead while I'm reading.
I believe it. So
words in front of me before I don't know how I do it, but I do it.
Yeah. That's awesome. So I suppose I'll get you to comment first.
Okay.
Oh,
are
you happy to do that?
I'm okay with that. I'm cool.
Okay.
I always like Diana's work. It has a depth and a layering to it that I find very compelling. And her use of language is impressive. She's got some references in here that I'm going to have to go back and look up. Obviously, she's crossing over back and forth with Celtic and English mythology, and then she delves into Greek with the Gaia, the mother of Earth, the goddess of Earth, and Aphrodite. But I think she puts down on her author's note St. David's Anglican Church. Is a heritage listed. Apparently, she's talking about a place, and she's got this long chronicle at the bottom of explanation of her writing, which I'm sure once I read it, will make me appreciate it that much the more. But I really like the way she constructs her pieces. Like I said, they're very layered, they're very detail oriented. It's like I'm trying to think of an apt analogy. It's like putting it rather than simply icing the cake, it's making drop flowers and putting them on the top too. So it's a very detailed her writing is very detailed.
Thank you, Captain. That was a great comment. I think I was drawn to, you write fiery letters to end this war and that coup, as if the foie gras and the mortar could scorch the ether-born Gaia draped in rosemary harvest. I thought the words were very powerful. It was very densely packed imagery, and it almost seemed to have a spiritual and religious richness to it with the insignia that was contained within.
Yes.
Great share.
Thanks.
Yeah. And what were your thoughts, Pam?
Yeah, I really liked this. There was kind of a religious and spiritual feel to it. There's a sense of delving into the past. I really like my language of pearl sounds dark and reddish to you, Gaul and Germania, calling black water soldiers, you know, like sanctioning the blitz of diamonds. There's a real epic feel in those lines alone, and just a wonderful imagery. I fed our sleeping Rhea four pink honey flowers when your mother's grave opened its brown mouth. I like the imagery in that. It's so very rich with the metaphor of feeling like swallowed up by history, by, you know, perhaps a competition for a husband's love, you know, being his mother. I also see that this is a pending pick, so that is really cool. Congratulations on that. And, yeah, this is just an excellent write all the way through and very well done.
Yeah, beautiful.
Great comment, Pam. And congrats on the FPP as well. That's fantastic. And next we've got a poem by The Beatnik, and it's called Become a Warrior. And I'll give this one a read. Care about what goes on and do your best to change what's wrong. Don't complain when your world falls down, because no one is going to be around to put your house back in place. So if you're counting on the human race, just remember you've got to take a stand and become a warrior, woman or man. Get involved in the solution to the problem, and fight the powers that be and hold them to account for the deeds they've done and how they've hurt almost everyone. End poem. And this was in answer to the prompt, the darkest places in hell are reserved for those who maintain their neutrality in times of moral crisis. What were your thoughts there, Captain?
First off, I think you did a splendid job reading it. I really like this brevity. The rhyming is very smooth, very subtle. The statement comes through very clearly as an interpretation of the chosen prompt. I believe this one was out of the Dorian Gray contest. Or no, the Divine Comedy contest. Basically saying that you put your house in place, if you're counting on the human race, just remember, you've got to take a stand. It's invoking an individual's responsibility to stand for something. And I think it says it very well. Get involved in the solution to the problem and fight the powers that be and hold them to account for the deeds they've done. So basically, if you don't stand up for something, you stand for nothing. And I think it's very, very well written.
Great comment, Captain. I thought that the language was really accessible and the message was clear, no fence-sitting. And Johnny Cash, who I swear we should have a contest about one day, once said, how well I have learned that there is no fence to sit on between heaven and hell. There is a deep, wide gulf, a chasm, and in that chasm is no place for any man. And I think that Beatnik has clearly emulated the prompt and this quote in his poem, if you do nothing, don't complain when your worlds fall down, because no one is going to be around to put your house back in place. Great poem. And I think Pam had to step away for a moment, so we'll jump on to the next poem. So I'll get you. Was that you, Pam? No, it's all good.
Captain, if you
be
can
right back.
Oh, she's got
a BRB up there. Be right back, yeah.
Oh, cool. No worries. So if you can read Brand New Day by Kill Smiles, Captain?
I would love to. Brand New Day, Kill Smiles. The first day I left for the airport, December morning, cold, snowy, flight canceled without delays. Second day, I tried again, flew away, only made it to Chicago O'Hare. More ice and snow, canceled again. Our plan isn't going anywhere yet. Next flight, LAX, arrived late at night, 16 hours later. Kingsford Air, Sydney, Australia. He waits there. Got through customs, just one snag, another story, came into baggage, jostling crowds, couldn't get out. Finally arrived in my lover's arms. Hours later, we stood at the altar, first kisses as husband and wife. Realized every step was worthwhile. We married on a brand new day, even though I was a little bit late. Cherish the memories every day. End poem. And the prompt,
Captain.
This was written to in the book, which is my memory, on the first page of the chapter, that is the day when I first met you, appear the words, here begins a new day.
I thought you did really, really well with this poem in answering that prompt. That was the chronicle tale of misconnections and finally professions of love at the altar. It was a deeply romantic rite and, as I said, a great answer to the prompt. And I think better late than never, they say. So, you know, 16 hours is worth the wait. And what were your thoughts there, Captain?
I like the storytelling, and I think it's a very relatable piece because we've all been held hostage by modern transportation and technology. And here she is trying to get to her wedding. And can you imagine, stressing enough as it is, and then to be subjected to these the vicissitudes of modern travel, but she resolves it all by saying she finally got there and it was worth every step. I really like the way she's summarized it. She's not bemoaning what she went through. She's realizing that it was all for one grand purpose, that her life began anew on that day. It was very, very loving, right, and very philosophical. And it's like, I went through all this, and I lived. I survived, and I got there.
Great comment, Captain. And Pam's back. Pam, did you have a chance to read the poem by Kel?
I did get a chance to read it, and I do. I enjoy Kel's style, and I enjoy how this really is about having, you know, a positive attitude and looking at things with fresh eyes and realizing that each day is new. And, you know, no matter what, and I really like how she focused on the fact that no matter what else went wrong, they got to the altar together. They shared their first kisses as husband and wife and realized that every step was worthwhile. I think this is just an excellent, heartfelt write and very well done.
Great comment, Sam. And, look, I think we'll have time for one more, and then we will do a quick hash down of what contests Sam and Captain have got running at the moment. So, Pam, if you could give this one a read, that would be greatly appreciated by Pastor David.
I would be happy to. This is Echoes of Eternity by Pastor David R.N., and it goes like this. Hell is not what mind envisioned, nor is heaven in the breach found between this world's derision and the truth the scriptures teach. Both surpass imagination, stand untouched by any dream. but the author of salvation offers hints from each extreme. Any taste of hellish torment during life's trajectory is a cautionary figment of perdition's agony. Every bliss of earthly blessing plants love's kiss upon the cheek as a foretaste of caressing in that land the faithful seek. One is warning for dissuasion from dark pitfalls of a thief, while the other is persuasion meant to woo us to believe. Heed God's tokens, admonition, grasp his pledge and find its worth. Please sin's path by true contrition, come to Christ for second birth. End poem.
Thanks, Pam. That was a great read. I found this to be a measured spiritual response to the prompt, "The Path to Paradise Begins in Hell." And I think, as Pastor David added in the author notes, starting here in this life or not at all. What I liked most about the poem was the fact that as humans, we do allot our designations on the way in which heaven or hell could be once passed. And there is extremism on both ends, which was identified. My favorite part was, one is warning for dissuasion from dark pitfalls of a thief, while the other is persuasion meant to woo us to believe. In essence, to me, it is talking about the God of the Old and New Testament and their vastly different interpretations. Quite well done. And I did mention the prompt there. Yes, the path to paradise begins in hell. And what were your thoughts there, Captain?
I thought it was a very well-written piece. I'm not spiritual-based writings are not my inclination, but I like the way he's written it. His rhyming scheme is very smooth. His message is very clear, and I think he's done a very fine job on this, especially the interpretation of the particular prompt.
Great comment, Captain. And the final comment for the night goes to Pam.
That wonderful rhyme and flow. I like that. I like when people speak of their personal faith. Which obviously isn't for everybody, but there's the way he just has a certain enthusiasm for what he speaks, and what else do I like? I like that he does mention that there's kind of extremes on either way you look, but either side of you look at the penny, there's always those who there's always that sense of extremes. And, I like the line, "Full surpass imagination, stand untouched by any dream." Excellent write, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. That was a great comment. And, Pam, would you like to mention any contests that you would like to get some rights for?
Absolutely. Let's see. Well, tomorrow I'm hosting the Art of Seduction. That contest will be closed, but people can put a write on the topic board, and it's got poem lines from the All Poetry Poet Mandy 42. Then Break On Through is Superstition, and that contest will still be open for a day or two. For Rex's next After Midnight show, he is running a contest that he just started today, so definitely needs writes. Quotes from Kurt von Goethe. I think I'm pronouncing that right.
Oh.
Some great quotes. The next Twisted Tuesday show, I got a contest up with quotes and paintings from Edward Hopper. So definitely plenty of goodies to check out.
Sounds like it. That's fantastic. And, Captain, I believe we have some contests coming up, the main one being a Spoiler alert, Game of Thrones related contest that will be coming up in the next couple of days.
I have the imaginative title of Winter is Coming. and it is going to be chock-a-block full of very, very profound quotes from the characters of Game of Thrones. There's a lot of really good ones in there. One of my favorites being, I think it was Jon Snow that says, "Father always said that every word after the word but is bullshit." I love that one. And I think that'll be in there. But yeah, I'm working on that. Yeah, and I've got a few other things cooking, but my co-host has to answer my texts so I know where to go next.
I have talked.
Nag, nag, nag. Yeah, the Game of Thrones one ought to be up in the next day or so. So, and we finished up on, and my judging on the Deviant Art should be out pretty soon here too. So, people seem to be enjoying what we've got going out there.
Yeah, I think and so. I think it was just unfortunate that the Olympics contest that we ran today was during the Olympics, so I think everyone was too busy watching the Olympics. So, what do you do?
Well, I thought
what
it was after. But we have in the offing, in the wings, we have possibly in the future contests with quotes from Freud and Jung, which I'm sure will get people stirred up, and some quotes from. We had Stephen Hawking. Was looking at Einstein, and you said something about Johnny Cash.
Yeah, I'm thinking Johnny Cash had some pretty. I kind of recall that Pam may have already touched on Johnny Cash, so we'll have to have a chat beforehand before we launch that one.
Yes, please. The Game of Thrones ones ought to be fun. There'll be a lot going on in that one. So, and I've started it, but I hope to have it finished here in the next day or so. So, other than that, not a damn thing.
All right. Well, I'll get cracking on those email responses. And Pam, I'd just like to thank you for shadowing me. We made it through.
Thank you, Pam.
And,
you did awesome, Neutron. Great show.
Absolutely.
Thank you. And with that,
we can
wrap up for tonight.
I'll warn you, Neutron, I pitched a couple of ideas for October for Halloween.
Awesome.
I do get ahead of myself, but I'm an opportunist.
Oh, I understand.
Hey, thank you, everyone.
All right, ladies. Well, thank you.
Ciao.
Bye.